This is Mae Brussel, the second half of World Watchers, program number 724, and we'll continue on some more about Joseph Mengele because of his connections of cocaine trafficking, Klaus Barbie's cocaine, and his big arrests and confusions. It's very important to center always going back to Joseph Mengele, the person, and also the cocaine dealer with Klaus Barbie. Jack Anderson, again, this is October 8th, 1985, said the Israelis have refused to close their files on Mengele. They sent an expert back to Brazil. A source close to the Israeli investigation confided that the Israelis have a 1982 letter in Mengele's handwriting. If the letter is authenticated, he could not have drowned in 1979. The Israeli and American intelligence agencies picked up reports of him in Paraguay in the 1980s. The United States intelligence and Israel. The latest was in August of 84. A CIA dispatch said that unconfirmed sightings of him were reported in the Paraguayan border cities. Now, it's that border between Paraguay and Brazil where a hunk of money, millions, has been put and was caught in 1984, making the chemicals possible for the cocaine manufacturing it to distribute to the United States. But I'll get to that in a second. Jack Anderson said the CIA has learned from a member of the Paraguayan dictator Alfred Stroessner's staff that Mengele sent correspondence, including Christmas card, to them from Portugal as late as 1980, and I've cited that in my research. He traveled back and forth between Portugal and Brazil. The Israeli authorities, according to sources who have talked to them, believe Mengele is alive, still in Paraguay. Secret CIA cables report that Mengele has been trafficking in drugs under the alias of Enrique Waldman, or Henrique, the French, H-E-N-R-I-Q-U-E, Enrique Waldman, W-L-L-M-A-N, and the others W-A-L-D-M-A-N. Like the Israelis, we haven't closed the books on Mengele. We have assigned our associate to spend full time to determine if he's alive or dead. And out of the Sacramento Bee, October the 10th, Mengele's death disputed, new clues cited. Israel is examining evidence that indicates that Joseph Mengele is still alive. Yitzhak Feinberg, press aide to Moshe Nissim, the justice minister, said that the top police found some new information in Brazil and they would not yet disclose all of it. But generally speaking, they said that the Israeli radio speculated that the new information might be a report from a German doctor who had treated Mengele's for a chronic bone disease. Dr. Kurt Lambert said the disease was an osteomyelitis. He said Mengele had trouble with his kidneys because of pus from the osteomyelitis, and the kidneys got in trouble. Lambert's quoted Mengele's as having told him these symptoms. Osteomyelitis is an infection of the bone marrow or the bone structure by bacteria that produces pus. An autopsy found no trace of osteomyelitis, and Dr. Lambert said, "I don't understand it. Any sign of osteomyelitis should have been found in São Paulo, Brazil." Now, the Sacramento Bee has another article, October the 10th. Wiesenthal script finished. Abby Mann, the producer, has a literal labor of love. The man who made Judgment at Nuremberg a write-off, the Marcus Nelson murders, the Atlanta child murders, which is a total disfigurement, was given the Wiesenthal assignment last December. He's making a movie, and he is treating Simon Wiesenthal as a great hero, and you can look forward to that movie Abby Mann is making on Wiesenthal, the Nazi hunter. Now, Wiesenthal speaks up as being very courageous. If you go back to my broadcast, and thanks to a friend in New York who indexed several years of World Watchers for me, we'll have to update those indexes. I wanted to look up how early I was talking about Mengele. And December 21st, 1979, broadcast number 420, I was talking about Joseph Mengele and colonial dignitat and his role down in South America and in Paraguay, and as the Israelis were saying, this is August 79, that he was down there in Paraguay and had been given asylum by Juan Perón originally, in Argentina, and I was asking a lot of questions about Joseph Mengele in 1979, and according to a new TV documentary, nobody cared, and nobody asked, and no papers were asked for until 1985. And I just want to mention this show. I don't know if you've seen it. It's on CNN. It's called Mengele, and I didn't want to watch it because I'm so sick of these whitewashes of these various stories like Jonestown and the Holocaust and Auschwitz and these various history accounts that are just pure fiction. So I avoided seeing it, and then I got very courageous and said, okay, I'll watch it, you know, and see what it is. I'll tape the sound and see how it goes. And it was very interesting. I understand David Frost helped make the movie in England, and he wanted his name off because he said Rolf Mengele, the son of Joseph Mengele, had all the decisions to make about the policies, and they even gave him money to make this movie. They paid him. He thought that was horrendous, considering the debt his father owes to humanity. And he wanted his name off, but there were certain points about that movie that were important, in case you didn't see it. The first one, he tells that Auschwitz had a population of approximately 250,000 people, and that Mengele's staff was mostly anthropologists. And the important thing is that when Mengele escaped and left, which they called a series of blunders, thanks to the American Army and the American and the International Red Cross and the Vatican, those were the two ways he got out, the U.S. intelligence, the Red Cross, and the Vatican. He was released, and even though in April of 45 his name was on war crimes. But he wanted to continue his medical research, and they had that on the show, that he took slides with him of his blood experiments and his work at Auschwitz. He left Auschwitz in January of 45, and the war wasn't over till May, so he could pack up anything he wanted, and he wanted to get to South America where he could continue his type of medical research. And so he was assisted getting there, and the first thing he did was to set up an office. When he had Dr. Joseph Mengele's name on it, and he was partner, he owned, his family gave him money for a small pharmaceutical business, and he worked with a Dr. Alfredo Timmerman, and began to work on his genetic experiments, on his true Aryan mentality experiments, while he was in South America. Now, when Jonestown came down, I referred to the medical experiments and the mind control as the boys from Guyana, because I believe bordering on Brazil and knowing Joseph Mengele was working medically and genetically at a hospital in Paraguay where he was sterilizing Indians. I had read that and heard that and was working in Brazil, and it's so close to Jonestown, where Jim Jones had been down in Brazil and Belo Horizonte before he came to the United States and then settled down there again. I wondered if there was any connection to that. So Mengele was active with medical experiments and took from Auschwitz those things. They didn't die. They went with him with the intention to continue. And they mentioned that Hans Sattelmeyer was that very vital link from the Mengele factory down to Argentina and then into Brazil, setting up his safe houses with avowed Nazis, Nazi sympathizers, and so forth. Then they mentioned the Stammers, the family they stayed with, and Gita Stammer, remember, the first one interviewed who housed Mengele in Brazil. Her husband was supposed to be away on a merchant marine ship, and I wondered if Mengele at that time could float away with him. And the movie just mentioned her, and as if she were separated from him, said Gaeta had a farm and Mengele bought land in Brazil, but her husband was away most of the time traveling. Well, what a perfect way for the Nazi Gestapo, with all those people in Brazil, boats going back and forth to all kinds of ports to take people back and forth. The Gestapo, Odessa, working at one place, housing Mengele, and his medical experiments, his dream of this pure nation going down with him, and then the other one traveling all the time on the boat, and he hasn't been seen since. But the interesting thing about the way the program ended was the very final lines were, Joseph Mengele left Auschwitz January 1945. There wasn't a search for him or a request for him until February 1985. The gap between those two dates is a disgrace. That's the way the movie ended. And I might say that I was looking in 79, becoming aware of what was going on with him and sharing with you in World Watchers. And I believe the only reason they started looking for him in January, in May or February of 85, was because Mae Brussel had been on the air for 3 years making the connections to Klaus Barbie, the International Drug Network, the Zurich banks, his banker, the courier, and the links to John DeLorean. And then as various drug dealers were arrested in Germany, they began to talk, and their talk led to the cocaine connections of Mengele and Barbie. And then the things that I had on World Watchers became understandable to the long listeners. You can't pick it up any moment. But that was a chronology, and you can check the dates of my broadcast and the chronology that came down. But nobody cared about him till 1985, when the people who were arrested on drug charges started to talk. And since that time, the trials are still put off. Klaus Barbie's trial has been delayed. The DeLorean trial in Detroit is delayed. Charles Ng will be delayed. The Rajneesh will never get to the bottom of the drug connections. And Mr. Seshola and all of them that interconnect, it'll be a long day, because when you murder somebody like Mr. Salenk, who's one of the kingpins, they all fall down by the wayside with their heart attacks and deaths. Now, interesting, the Liberty Bell publications that I told you about in West Virginia that has Nazi literature has a letter which was addressed to an attorney in Germany named Manfred Roeder. Now, Manfred Roeder is in jail now on drug charges. He's a lawyer. He is in contact with and attends the Aryan Nations up in Idaho. He is the man who, in February of 1985, was in a, while he was in jail, got a letter from Paraguay that said, "Uncle is dead. He drowned." And that led the prison officials to go through the mail and lead us to the drowning location in Brazil, along with the attorney of Joseph Mengele, who gave the Bossert's address away to end the case and dig up those old bones. Well, the letter was written and translated. It was written by Mr. Hermann Munk from Vienna, Austria, addressed to attorney Manfred Roeder in 1969. This is a long time ago. It's called La Via Dolorosa of Simon Wiesenthal. "Gentlemen, please allow me to submit the following background information on self-styled Eichmann hunter engineer Simon Wiesenthal. Until the end of the German campaign against Poland in 39, Wiesenthal worked as a foreman in the oil fields of Grozny, Poland. The title engineer he assumed on his own authority. After the defeat of Poland, Wiesenthal beat his retreat to Romania. Soon after the arrival of the German Army Training Regiment in Bucharest and the establishment of the security services, Wiesenthal entered the services of the latter of the Gestapo SD, the security services of the SS Gestapo, and remained a collaborator until Romania was vacated by the German troops. Later on, he surfaced in Vienna, claiming to be a racially persecuted," you like this letter, "persecuted, and that he spent a long time in German concentration camps. This, as well as his claim to the title engineer, are figments of his own imagination, since he never spent a single day in a concentration camp. All this information was recently brought to the attention of the Israeli, this is the Israeli cultural community in Vienna. Wiesenthal is no longer respected in those circles. I might add, he makes millions. He just broke ground this week for a $100 million remembrance center on federal government property in Washington, D.C. The letter concludes, "We can only assume Wiesenthal's actions are not based on ethical reasons, but pure and simple desire for self-aggrandizement, and that it is an adventurer without scruples." It's signed Hermann Munk, and it was sent to the same Manfred Roeder who connects to the Lockheed engineer who worked with the U-2, and Thane Caesar, who shot and killed Robert Kennedy. Manfred Roeder of the International Odessa Nazi South America, North America link. This was 1969. It just didn't come out recently. And then they published this same publication. So I'll give you the address of where to order this correspondence. In 1973, a correspondence between Mr. Wiesenthal and attorney Manfred Roeder with a lot of name-calling. And then there's a book on Auschwitz and a personal account of Austria with an attorney by Dr. Manfred Roeder, an attorney at law, and they're trying to break down the idea that Auschwitz was a death center, such as has been claimed by so many people, and they claim it's for mercenary reasons that they're raising this money to continue what they claim is a hoax. That I know people were killed and tortured at Auschwitz, and it's hard to tangle the truth from the facts in this case. Sometimes I often felt that there couldn't have been an Auschwitz, because the feeling of the Jewish community, by and large, is to hate Russia that freed them from Auschwitz and believe that war against Russia is better than being a partner of the Germans and suppressing the track record of the Germans. In one of these correspondents on Auschwitz is a picture of Manfred Roeder, a successful farmer, an attorney. It tells about his role in the National Socialist movement in the Reich, and he's led mass demonstrations. He wants to relieve Rudolf Hess. But you'd think that some of these people in charge for drug dealings or so forth were really hard criminal types. He's sort of a G. Gordon Liddy serving his time in jail in Germany, who helped find the corpse of Joseph Mengele, while the truth is that it isn't Mengele, and he perpetuates the myth, and Roeder is directly involved in that and goes a long way back in these stories. Now, the Washington Post has a long article, an interview, making a superstar out of Mr. Curley, Ellis Curley, October the 6th, 1985, the Sunday paper. And I've mentioned him before with a person who went down to identify the body of Joseph Mengele. And he has an interview, and he says that they asked him about his work and his questions. One of the questions is, you worked on the JFK case, the Howard Hughes case, and the Mengele's case. Now you're working on MOVE. How does it feel to have a part in determining history? And he said, I don't know if I determine history as much as determining who was involved in it. As if Mr. Ellis Curley is telling you who was involved in anything in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Look how he turns that around. By his so-called anthropological autopsies, he can lie about John Kennedy, lie about Howard Hughes, lie about Joseph Mengele, and wait till the MOVE case comes together. Now, they have a biography, a picture of a forensic anthropologist, Ellis Curley, and I mentioned that he's the fellow in February that got a skull or drawings from the Defense Department and studied it, and before the Mengele body was, in quotes, discovered, and February of 85 is when all the drug stories were breaking apart and when Mr. Roeder was talking and saying, Uncle is drowned, and Curley was getting this skull. It describes Curley, and I've talked about him before. He's some of 35 certified forensic anthropologists. He helped in significant cases, including the 1978 Congressional Subcommittee for the Investigation of Assassinations. Now, that is G. Robert Blakey covering up the murder of John Kennedy. And it said he worked with aspects of the Hughes estate settlement and the remains of American servicemen. More recently, he's been Sao Paulo, Brazil. Mr. Curley fought in the European theater, World War II. He worked in Japan from 1945 to 55. That would be with Charles Willoughby, Douglas MacArthur, and you know the notorious examination of bodies and the covering up of experimentations, even on American soldiers there for use of our forensic people later in the United States and for our military. He was active identifying bodies in the Korean War. He worked with the CIA, the FBI, and numerous police and sheriffs nationwide, and he's the first person to become a board-certified forensic anthropologist in the United States. And in 1972, he helped establish a section of physical anthropology in the American Academy of Forensic Scientists. All of this is so much BS. He got his BS. He got his BS from University of Kentucky, PhD in Michigan, taught at the University of Kansas, and now teaches anthropology in Michigan. So he worked with G. Robert Blakey in the House Select Committee on Assassinations, which covered up again the murder of John Kennedy, and the original autopsy and the decision of bullet 399 doing all of those wounds to John Kennedy was covered up by Arlen Specter, who hired Mr. Curley, or who worked with him and helped with Senator D'Amato create the situation for the reward for Mengele's from the Congress of the United States, and then to cover it up with their hearings, so that Arlen Specter of the Warren Commission is now approving with Mr. Curley's findings, and he's working with G. Robert Blakey from the second Kennedy investigation. Now, last week I briefly mentioned, and I will outline it again, an article. This again has to do with that drug network, and this is that Brazilian connection to Milan, Italy, to the other instances I mentioned earlier. This is the New York Times, an article on G. Robert Blakey helping with the investigation and arrest of the U.S.-Italian organized crime prosecutions. And this New York Times story has Robert Blakey from the House Select Committee on Assassinations, from his work with the Kennedy assassination. They just passed that over and say he's from Notre Dame. The article is October the 10th, 1985, and the investigations that he's helping with are the pizza connections and the Tommaso Busetta, the Sicilian mafia, who was connected, and it goes into his arrest in Brazil, how he went back to Italy, then went back to Brazil. Mr. Tommaso Busetta is as important as Mr. Salenk, and the late Mr. Salenk, in making these very, very important connections of the Mengele cocaine, the Barbie cocaine, the Sicilian Arsan Vatican connections. Remember, it's the Vatican that let Mengele and Barbie and these people out. And in return, they went into the drug traffic to increase the money for the wars against those people that oppose, say, the Roman Church, or they consider them opponents of their laborers or want land reforms and so forth. The Vatican is tightening up all kinds of reforms and changes. They just silenced the priest in Brazil for 1 year. He can't talk. So they gave their passports to these people, and these people paid back by increasing their funds to the church and increasing the money for the guns. And the way they did it was through drug traffic. And the London Observer, I cited once before, has a full page. What I have to do is outline each of these articles for you, but there's so much news coming in. It's the week in focus. The mafia goes to court. There's the picture of Mr. Busetta. Not since Benito Mussolini, I mentioned this before, has, when he acted against the mafia, has there been such a barrage against the mafia. So Tommaso Busetta, as I said, is in Italy. He's testifying. There's 95 murders he's talking about, 5 attempted murders. Trials beginning in Palermo. Salenk, who was killed in Turkey, was an important witness, but Tommaso has connections. According to the London papers, the distribution centers are towns like Oregon and Illinois, and so the Oregon drug connections question, the arrest up in Vancouver 2 weeks ago, and the link to the Rajneesh, and why Bhagwan fled, because they are international drug traffic through Europe, the same channels, drugging. So all of these things are coming together, the Italian court case. But involved with the Italian court case is G. Robert Blakey from the House Select Committee, and G. Robert Blakey hiring and working with Mr. Curley the first time on the Kennedy papers, and his going down to Brazil at this time, where that, if it wasn't the dead Mengele, it would be a live one, as Jack Anderson said, still involved in drug traffic. Now, last year, there was a mysterious plane crash that I talked about on World Watchers, number 686. That was January 85. There was an airplane that crashed up in the mountains. It left Asunción, Paraguay, just at the time when they were starting to look for Mengele, and Mrs. Clarsfield had gone down to look for Mengele just about that time. I think just the week that this plane crashed, she'd found Klaus Barbie, the other half of the drug traffic. And, of course, we have Mr. DeLorean with Gordon Novell by his side. Novell from the Permandex, the Defense Industry Security Clearance Group. So this plane crashed into a mountain in Bolivia, and they couldn't find any survivors, even with all our modern technology. That was January the 6th, 1985. A team of Bolivian climbers fighting high against the winds, and an Eastern airline. Now, since that story I had on World Watchers, Eastern airline has been fined for heavy cocaine narcotics trafficking, A Boeing 727 carrying 29 people, 8 of them Americans, crashed into the mountain, and one of them was Marion Davis, the wife of the U.S. ambassador to Paraguay, Arthur Davis. Another was William Kelly, director of the Peace Corps in Paraguay, and Jonathan Watson, a Marine, and a group of Eastern Airline employees from Miami and Houston, large narcotic centers. The radio went down. They had no message of these people, and I talked about that and the possibility that not finding any people on that plane, that they could have been either listed as passengers and not been on there and then escaped, and one of them with an alias could have been Joseph Mengele. I'm sure they didn't run out of disguises for these people. And I referred to the book The Final Trace by Brian Boylan, and he is a gentleman who told me about the cocaine and the drug connections and the Barbie and Hetrick and Mengele connections. So he had written a book in 1983 on Joseph Mengele. He had talked to Joseph Mengele when he was in South America. And in his book, which he was forced to make a fiction because of threats and so forth, he has an ending where a plane leaves Asuncion in Paraguay and it's on its way to Brazil, to the exact airport, that plane was on its way to Bolivia, not Brazil, and how the plane, there's a violent explosion in midair, and the plane goes down, and they get all the bodies, but three people that were supposed to have been on board, and he sort of suggests that it would be Mengele and two others that weren't on the plane, but were using these aliases. That was his fiction, but it was just a guess on how Mengele could leave Europe. Well, just this last week, October 17th, there's an article in the Washington Post, and then I have another one from the East. Air crash probers' luck runs 50-50. They found the bomb that was on the Air India outside of Ireland that had left Canada, but it said air safety investigators failed to recover the black box of the wreckage of the Eastern Airlines plane buried on a Bolivian mountaintop. Two members of a six-person team reached the airplane after a two-day climb in the mountains of La Paz with limited digging equipment, and including the National Transportation Safety Board. They couldn't find the tail. They couldn't find the two black boxes or the data recorder that would tell them about what was going on. The Boeing 727 carrying 29 people, including the crew, crashed in the mountainside New Year's Day. It was significantly off course on a flight from Asuncion, Paraguay, to La Paz, Bolivia. And this January was just when the heat was going to take place on opening up the relationships, or had already, between Mengele and Barbie, and this plane went down. It said they went through the rugged territory. They made an investigation, but they can't do the normal accident investigation. It's impossible because not a single body was found. Don't you think that's kind of cute? This Eastern airline goes down with these prominent people, the wife of the ambassador and the head of the Peace Corps, which a lot of times is intelligence, and a team of Americans and other people, and they find the plane, and there's no black box, and there's no bodies. I think that's really kind of bizarre, and I called Brian to see if he'd seen it in his newspaper in Minneapolis, and he hadn't. Jack, the time is running out. I'll do the Dan White next week in Rajneesh, but I want to finish this Paraguay connection while we're on it. Jack Anderson had another story. This is September 24th. State Department officials are making a connection between Paraguay and cocaine. He calls it the Paraguay connection. Nearly 50,000 gallons of a chemical, diethyler, acetone, and hydrochloric acid, which would sell on the black market for 30 times the price they command for industrial use. The shipment was discovered September 22nd, 1984. That's when Mengele would be, and the Mossad reports, the CIA reports. They found it September 24th, 1984, by a Paraguayan customs agent in a small town on the Brazilian border between Paraguay and Brazil. The United States has repeatedly asked Paraguay to burn the chemicals or send them back to the West German firm that manufactures the chemicals, and they refused to burn them, and they could only have been used for cocaine production. The Latin American costs, they say, are just minuscule compared to what they can get in the cocaine production. And Jack Anderson is saying they refused to destroy it, so that they caught this hunk of material to manufacture cocaine on the border between Paraguay and Brazil. And that's the time when the sightings were noticed, that Mr. Mengele was going back and forth between Paraguay and Brazil and was, in fact, involved in drug traffic. And Jack Anderson wrote last week his aliases and that he's still into the drug traffic. Well, I wanted to do 1 hour on Dan White, the mind control of Dan White, a microcosm of our killings in America, and how they're done and how they get away with it, and even how they are told to kill themselves when it's over. But I don't have enough time. The hour went too fast, and I wanted to get those segments to you because they tie in these various drug arrests, murders related to drug cases, drug trials going on. Save as many articles as you can on those things. I thank you for the ones you sent to me, and I'll do more on Dan White next week. As I say, the time is going too fast now. And also, I mentioned just several weeks ago, a murder in Santa Barbara under the little mountain peak of Ronald Reagan's ranch, of the all-American boy who wanted to go to the Naval Academy, how he murdered a man in the park bench and slit his throat. There's a long article about that in the Chronicle this week, finally, but it's not a wire service story. So I'll start with that next week and get back to you on the Dan White story. This is Mae Brussel. Have a good week, and thanks for all the articles.